I'm Dori Smith with Regime Change Radio, a half-hour program on the importance of voting to bring about regime change in America. Today, part one of a two-part series on the trial of former Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein, with law professor Marjorie Cohn, executive vice president of the National Lawyers Guild and professor of law at Thomas Jefferson School of Law. She is a leader in her field of international and human rights law and has been a strong voice against the war and occupation of Iraq. Attorney Cohn took a team to the 8th Inter-American Human Rights Moot Court competition in 2003. A previous guest on this program, John Washburn, of the American NGO Coalition for the International Criminal Court, explained the history of the Bush administration's withdrawal from the ICC. You can read about this subject online at amicc.org. Many attorneys have criticized the tactic of the Bush administration and set forth their argument that the White House is setting up a double standard where America is not held to the same international legal standards used to assess the behavior of other nations. According to attorney Marjorie Cohn, there is no way to establish that a new Iraqi court contains the due processes guaranteed by the ICC's statute because it was set up in secret by the U.S.-appointed Iraqi Governing Council. Marjorie Cohn, welcome to the program.
My pleasure, Dori.
Now, you have been writing extensively about your assertions that the U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq has constituted violations of international law. How do you now see the arrest and the detention of former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein?
Well, the war in Iraq, it was unlawful and continues to be unlawful. It was executed in violation of the UN Charter, which requires that the person, the state using force, get the approval of the Security Council, or that state using force act in self-defense. And neither of those things happened. And Bush tried very hard to get a Security Council resolution which would have validated his war in Iraq, and the Security Council was not forthcoming with such a resolution. And he did justify his invasion of Iraq by cobbling together various resolutions in the past, none of which together or separately legitimized the invasion of Iraq. And therefore, the arrest or capture, if you will, of Saddam Hussein, the president of Iraq, was also unlawful.
And now, how does that stand America with the rest of the world? And I mean, there are other countries that are looking at Saddam Hussein. Some may even want to try him. How will the rest of the world view what America has done with the arrest and then immediate statement that we would be trying him in Iraq or by Iraqis?
It's hard to generalize because there are countries and people around the world who are probably very happy that we've caught Saddam Hussein and we'll put him on trial, and there are other countries and people who are not happy, such as the people in the Arab world. My understanding is that more than 600 Jordanian lawyers have come forward to volunteer to defend Saddam Hussein, and the Arab Lawyers Union is setting up an international team for his defense. They believe that he's been unlawfully arrested. We certainly got a lot of resistance from many countries, many European countries and other countries as well, who did not approve of the invasion. And some of them have jumped on board and said, we will support you. And some of that is economic and political, of course, that these countries want their corporations to be able to benefit from the lucrative reconstruction contracts. And also, given the fact that the United States is the most powerful military force in the world today, the only superpower that remains, most countries are very afraid to defy the United States. But again, it's hard to get a read on exactly how many people around the world support this capture of Saddam Hussein and how many don't.
Talk a little bit about that, if you will, Marjorie Cohn. I know you've written a little bit about Yemen and looked at that as it relates to how other nations would look at America's urgency to go to war.
Yes, when George Bush Sr. wanted the Security Council to pass a resolution authorizing the first Gulf War in 1990-1991, Yemen was one of the non-permanent members on the Security Council, and Yemen refused to vote for that resolution to authorize the United States to attack Saddam Hussein after Saddam Hussein went into Kuwait. And after that vote, a high official in the then Bush administration said to the ambassador of Yemen, that will be the most expensive vote you ever cast. And the United States promptly cut off all foreign aid to Yemen, which was the at that time the poorest Arab country. And many countries are very much aware of that precedent in and understand that defying the United States has a price. So I'm sure that that has had an effect on countries who are jumping on board to help the United States in its occupation of Iraq and rebuilding of Iraq.
We do seem rather stranded in Iraq right now, and it almost seems as if the arrest of Saddam Hussein opened a vast can of worms that left America with yet another task to do in the middle of being already overwhelmed by violence, by a lack of stability in the region we now occupy. Talk a little bit about that as it relates to the present climate in which the Bush administration is proposing to try Saddam Hussein in Iraq.
Well, it's a mess. I mean, the United States government has created a mess in Iraq. And mind you, I'm not saying that there were not human rights violations that were being committed by Saddam Hussein against his own people and the Iranians and the Kurds. But he was not a threat to the United States. And although there were atrocities being committed, people were eating, electricity was running, water was flowing. And what has happened now, in addition to the fact that thousands and thousands of Iraqi civilians, women and children, have been killed, and many are in hospitals that are overflowing, to say nothing, of course, of the American soldiers who have been killed as well, and the other so-called coalition forces soldiers have been killed and wounded. The infrastructure of Iraq has been devastated by this war, and many people in Iraq who oppose Saddam Hussein's rule are now saying that it was at least better than what's happening now because the society is such a mess. And to talk about having a trial in the midst of this chaos when the institutions have been destroyed, there is no constitutional structure, there's no existing legitimate judiciary, is really preposterous and makes me think that if this trial does happen before November, that it will be a show trial aimed at the election of George W. Bush. He has hailed this capture of Saddam Hussein as a great victory, and certainly no one is talking about the missing weapons of mass destruction or Saddam's non-connection with the September 11th events. But the problem that Bush faces, a couple of problems, is first of all, the terrorism that Bush's war has unleashed is not going away just because Saddam Hussein is in custody. In fact, it may even be getting worse. And George W. Bush said that Saddam Hussein should be tried in a public trial. But the problem with that is that if he is truly tried in a public trial, his defense is going to be that the United States supported him while he was committing these atrocities, while he was gassing the Kurds and the Iranians. And after all, the United States, if we go back to 1963, the U.S. played a major role in overthrowing the Iraqi leader, General Abdul Qasem, after the CIA unsuccessfully tried to assassinate him. And that led to Saddam Hussein's Ba'ath Party coming to power. And during the war between Iran and Iraq, the U.S. supplied Iraq with military intelligence and the means to create the chemical and biological weapons that it used. And in 1983, Donald Rumsfeld, who was then part of the Reagan administration, went to Iraq And he, the month before he went to Iraq, which was about 20 years ago, last December 20th, U.S. intelligence reports had shown that the Iraqis were engaged in an almost daily use of chemical weapons against Iran. And yet, even with that knowledge, 1 month later, Rumsfeld went to Baghdad, met with Saddam Hussein, and assured Saddam Hussein that Washington would resume full diplomatic relations with Iraq. And the Iraqi leaders hailed Rumsfeld's visit, saying that it elevated U.S.-Iraqi relations to a new level. Then, in 1984, the following year, Rumsfeld, who, by the way, ran a pharmaceutical firm at the time, which is interesting, he also, at that time as well, assured Iraq of the United States' continuing support. And during the war between Iraq and Iran, there was a highly classified program involving more than 60 officers of the Defense Intelligence Agency who shared intelligence on where the Iranian troops were deploying and other crucial information to facilitate Iraq's use of chemical weapons against Iran. And this is according to the New York Times report, and the report about the 1983 incident is from a Washington Post report. So these are things that certainly Saddam Hussein would bring up, and he would say, "What, you're charging me with war crimes? Well, I was defending my country against this was a legitimate campaign." The war with Iran, and he would also say that his actions against the Kurds or quashing the Shiites who were rebelling were also quashing terrorism. Now, in wartime you can attack military targets, but even if it is a legitimate military target, you cannot disproportionately harm civilians. So that is one problem that he would have. But one of the problems that the prosecutors would face, and of course we don't know where he's going to be tried, that's another issue, is that they have to link him to the crimes they would allege against him. And there's a doctrine of command responsibility where they have to show some kind of a connection between him and the crimes that were being committed by his underlings. You have to show he knew about it and he had some kind of command and authority over it. One of the things I think that we should talk about is where he's going to be tried. There's no doubt that Bush is going to determine where and when and how Saddam Hussein is tried and probably ultimately executed. And the question is whether he will be tried in an Iraqi tribunal or a U.S. military tribunal or a tribunal with international and Iraqi participation under the auspices of the U.N. It looks like, on December 10th, the U.S. hand-picked Iraqi Governing Council, with approval from the Pentagon and the State Department, enacted a new Iraqi criminal tribunal statute with no input from international experts, by the way. And it is, even though Bush has really thumbed his nose at the International Criminal Court, the definition of the major crimes from the International Criminal Court statute are included in this Iraqi criminal statute. But it's also going to rely on principles from the Ba'athist Criminal Procedure Code and likely will carry the death penalty, which none of the other international criminal tribunals do. The International Criminal Court doesn't allow for the death penalty. The Yugoslavia Tribunal, the Rwanda Tribunal don't allow for the death penalty. And the way that the Iraqi tribunal statute was written, the judges would be Iraqis, although they would have power to hire international experts to give it some legitimacy. And because of the hue and cry from the international community, including Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International, it's my understanding from an article, a recent article in, I believe it was the Washington Post, that at the last minute, the tribunal statute was amended to allow for foreign judges, for international judges. But it remains to be seen where and when Saddam Hussein will be tried. And the other thing to keep in mind, well, I think that the best, and this is an idea that was also put forth in an editorial in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago, that the best place to try him would be in a special hybrid tribunal established by the UN Security Council, like the one in Sierra Leone, which would utilize international standards of due process and still have significant Iraqi participation. But one thing to keep in mind is that U.S. leaders will not be tried for their war crimes in Iraq. The same way that after World War II, at Nuremberg, major Nazi leaders were tried and convicted, but the U.S. leaders were never held accountable for dropping the atom bomb on and killing 100,000 Japanese civilians, which was a war crime. It was a crime against humanity. And the concept, that concept of only trying the vanquished and not the victors is called victor's justice. And so, although in my opinion and in the opinion of many other people, Bush and his advisors have committed a crime of aggression, a war of aggression, as defined by the Nuremberg Tribunal and as outlined in the International Criminal Court statute, they will never be brought to trial for their crimes against the Iraqi people.
You mentioned a date of December 10th, and Saddam Hussein was captured, if you will, on the 13th. Am I correct?
Yes. That's timing is fortuitous.
It is fortuitous. Let's talk a little bit about the other countries involved again, because it seemed that when the Bush administration was working to cobble together the coalition of the willing, they had a lot of difficulty with various countries. Do you expect that the same problems will come up with various countries when the trial of Saddam Hussein starts?
That's a good question. I think it depends upon how and when and where he's tried and whether or not the international community feels that it is a legitimate process. The Human Rights Watch has already come out against this Iraqi tribunal because it was established without sufficient international participation. And Human Rights Watch has said that if information that Saddam Hussein might raise in his defense is relevant to the charges against him, information about assistance and support he might have received from the United States or other governments while these alleged crimes were occurring, then he ought to be able to bring that evidence forward. And we'll see if that happens. There is a trial, of course, that's been going on for 2 years in The Hague against Slobodan Milosevic, and as part of he's defending himself, and as part of his defense, he has tried to put the leaders of NATO on trial for their crimes against humanity and war crimes committed in Kosovo. And recently, and the fact that it's been televised to the people in Yugoslavia or the former Yugoslavia has created tremendous support for him among the Serbian community, and he and other Serbian leaders have been elected to parliament, which is strange. Some of them are actually facing war crimes trials, and they were elected last week. But the United States government has recently shown its ability to interfere with the proceedings of tribunals when the General Wesley Clark was going to testify in the Milosevic trial. And the U.S. officials insisted that the testimony take place behind closed doors, and also the Bush administration reviewed the transcripts to edit out anything that might be, they say, impact negatively national security, but that would prove embarrassing to them. And certainly the Bush administration is going to have even more influence over the tribunal, whatever tribunal ultimately is used to try Saddam Hussein.
Now, I think, Marjorie Cohen, it's fair to say a large number of Americans have heard about Halaba and the 1988 massacre there of 5,000 Kurds by Saddam Hussein, but a large number have no idea that there's a trial of any other kind, a war crimes tribunal, going on in the Balkans. And there is a huge vacuum of information. There's a huge problem with loss of information. International news does not get into the U.S. Do you expect to continue to see that the Bush administration will focus on those deaths in 1988 and not even discuss any of the things that will be said by, say, those attorneys that have come forward from Jordan or any other member of the international community who wants to talk about this matter?
Well, what you're really asking is what the media is going to allow, is going to bring to the American electorate, because we're facing an election next year, and the most people get their news from really the broadcast media, television and radio, and that is going to be very influential in the voters deciding who they're going to vote for. And that's why the candidates are trying to raise millions and millions of dollars to be able to influence the airwaves. You know, a democracy, in a true democracy, there is a necessity that people be given full information and that people be educated in order to really exercise their rights to determine their own government. And the real challenge will be to have all viewpoints represented and not just the viewpoints of the Fox and MSNBC and the networks and cable stations, which certainly during the what Bush calls major hostilities, although certainly the war in Iraq is still going on, we saw a very one-sided view. CNN and other stations showed us the fireworks over Baghdad as if it was a great theater. We did not see the pictures that the people in the Arab world saw of children who were bleeding to death, missing limbs, dead women. We didn't see that. And it remains to be seen how much of what's really happening in Iraq, and including what's happening with Saddam Hussein, will filter through. Now, one thing we did see right after Saddam Hussein was arrested was repeatedly the media treated us to wall-to-wall coverage of shots of a doctor looking into Saddam's mouth as he grimaced. And although it certainly makes for sensational news, and the Bush administration, liked showing and the media as well, Saddam Hussein, Hitler of the day, this violated the Geneva Convention, which forbids subjecting prisoners to humiliation and public ridicule. And the United States has ratified the Geneva Convention. And Donald Rumsfeld said, well, it was more important that we show Iraqis that we really had him. And, of course, so that they could say, yes, that's Saddam Hussein. And, of course, he was identified. He had already been identified with DNA evidence. But the fact that it was shown over and over and over again in such a humiliating way, it was a violation of the Geneva Convention.
You're suggesting that it's possible that the U.S. media might also be brought up at any trial, where Saddam Hussein has a voice of any kind. It was, after all, the media that showed things over and over again. But it is interesting, to find out in the future whether or not Donald Rumsfeld would claim that these were the only pieces of tape they had of Saddam Hussein, of, the doctor examining his oral cavities. I mean, it was a very bizarre scene, and also one that seemed quite intended to dehumanize Saddam Hussein. Now, about that subject, we have talked a little bit about that subject here, and I want to go into the dehumanization of the Iraqi people a little bit and just put things in perspective. We've just seen a horrible earthquake in Iran, where they're now talking about in excess of 28,000 deaths and many more injuries. If we look at that as compared to what's happened with the U.S. invasion and occupation, there is a physicians group, MedAct, that is claiming that their calculations are telling them that between 22,000 and 50,000 Iraqis have died, and largely civilians.
Wow, that's really disturbing. You just don't see that on Fox News. You don't see that on CNN. Another statistic that I think Americans should be aware of is that upwards of 11,000 U.S. soldiers have died, been wounded, or medically evacuated from Iraq. And we don't see the coffins coming back because the Pentagon has decided that people get too upset when they see coffins coming back. Over half of the people currently in the military do not intend to reenlist. There is a shortage of soldiers in Iraq and in other places. And there is talk that Bush, if he is elected in November, will bring back the draft. The Department of Defense website was asking for volunteers in the event of a draft, volunteers for a draft board. And if you just do the math, there just are not enough soldiers to go around for all of Bush's so-called preemptive wars. And that means that those of us who have boys of draft age, 18 to, 25 or even older, should be aware that even though Bush may say no, 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 read my lips, the way his father did when he said he wouldn't raise taxes, that we will very likely see a draft, military draft, if Bush is elected. And that's something that during the Vietnam War really made people very, not only what was happening to the Vietnamese, which we saw much more graphically on our television sets back in the 60s and 70s than we're seeing now, but also that really galvanized the anti-war movement when young boys were being drafted to go to fight in a war which was not a war that was justified and, in fact, we know now was an unjust war.
Marjorie Cohn is a professor of law at Thomas Jefferson School of Law in San Diego and the executive vice president of the National Lawyers Guild. If you are a member of the U.S. military, are being recruited, or have questions about becoming a CO, conscientious objector, you can learn more about the process of entering the military or refusing to by calling the hotline at the Center for Conscience and War and the GI Rights Hotline. The number is 1-800-483-2220. This group also has an online service at www.nisbco.org for information about your rights and the U.S. military, including questions about a possible U.S. draft. Did you know that you have to have evidence that you were interested in becoming a conscientious objector before you were contacted by the U.S. military about service? That number again is 1-800-483-2220. For Regime Change Radio, I'm Dori Smith. This program was produced in the studios of WHUS Doors, Radio for the People. If you would like to comment on this program or learn more about this topic, write to me at rcrradio@aol.com. The views and opinions expressed in this program are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or the University of Connecticut.